Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to Consequence Uncut, a series that gives listeners and readers a deeper dive into our features with major artists.
For this episode, we're talking to Incubus's Brandon Boyd for a conversation that we had about the 23rd anniversary edition of Morning View.
But there's always going to be something. There's always going to be something that's happening, and we need art to help us make sense of it. There's always going to be some political uprising or a financial collapse or a pandemic or a terrorist attack. And that's not to be crass about these things or underscore their importance. But art to me is what helps us make sense of all of the constant chaos.
I'm Mijan Zulu, lead podcast producer at Consequence.
I am Paolo Ragusa, an associate editor at Consequence.
Paolo, welcome back. It's been forever since I've seen you on Consequence Uncut. I mean, obviously we work together, so there are, you know, like, there are the odd meetings and whatnot. But when we get to hang out on the pod, I feel like this is just our like special time.
I know. I love it. Every time, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Mijan.
I couldn't be more happy than to discuss this Incubus interview. I mean, I remember being, I mean, I want to say I was a little kid, but I really wasn't. But I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Drive came out and it was just this like, I don't know, it was this really good mix between like, I mean, it's not folk, but like that kind of like acoustic rock. It was acoustic rock. And then they had their kind of like rock out moment, you know? So yeah. It kind of gave you everything and it had this sense of hope. Especially because, oddly, very close to September 11th, like, weird, right?
Yeah. It's funny because Drive came out on the album that came out before this one that they have re-recorded. But I have been listening to Incubus, I think, like, yeah, my whole life. I was definitely a child when they first got big. Mm-hmm. Their third and their fourth albums, both Make Yourself and Morning View kind of back to back, were a huge, huge backdrop of just my childhood. I grew up in Southern California listening to a lot of radio rock, and Incubus was one of those kind of steadfast bands that just was around all the time. And I've definitely grown in appreciation for them over the years. And getting to talk with them specifically about Morning View, this album that kind of came, like you mentioned, it was just the turn of the millennium at such a specific time. Radio rock and hard rock was in such a weird kind of difficult place. And Incubus kind of emerged with a really hybrid sound. And from then on, I really think from Morning View onwards, they charted their own path completely. And this new re-recording is a testament to that.
I don't know what it is, but their lyrics were just always so on point. Like, whatever tomorrow brings, I'll be there. I keep going back to the same song, but I just wanted to use that as an example of like, they kind of hit the bullseye of how to be like angsty, but like hopeful.
Definitely.
And I feel like that's what I love about their music. Like, I always feel like there's more, you know, it's more than just like you sit and you listen to it. Like, there's always like a message that like I can take and like, you know,
totally,
you know, be transported.
Totally. Right. And I think in this interview, it was nice to talk to Brandon Boyd about, you know, the distance and time that has passed since he wrote a lot of the lyrics on Morning View. And, you know, what's interesting is that they recorded this album in Malibu. And I feel like, you know, that's such a huge aspect to this album's identity. It's on the album cover. You can like practically feel like the sand on your feet when you're listening to it. But at the same time, like, I really appreciate that there is such an internal focus that Brandon Boyd really finds in the lyrics on this album. The ambition is really exciting. It's incredible to hear a band at this point in the you know, rock pantheon. They're getting all of this kind of hard rock promotion. Like, they're looped in with a lot of these bands that they were kind of straying further away from. And still, there was this massive ambition. And that was a huge theme of what we talked about, especially now that 23 years have passed. And they're all very different people than they were when they were recording this album in 2003.
I'm sure they were. And he really does speak to that when he's like, he talks about how they've really grown as people. And it's really funny. He's like, success is a very interesting ingredient to any band. And I was like, yeah, because it can destroy them. But Incubus still existing and being together and, you know, doing this re-record and really showing how these songs continue to evolve. And, you know, we allow them to do that. Like, artists can't be the same thing for, you know, years and years and years. And I mean, I think I'm going to use this on some of my friends when they're being like immature or silly. I mean, like, I don't think you've gotten your wrinkles out yet.
That's true. It's true. And I think that was like a great way to kind of end our conversation. And throughout, we talk about so many different things, especially like looking back on that period when Morning View was released in 2003. We talked about how it was released like right before 9/11. And they were in New York for 9/11. And it was just an absolutely crazy experience.
It's one of those like JFK moments, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and like people say, I knew where I was when JFK got shot. Like, everyone knows where they were when they're on 9/11 if they were like cognizant at the time. And for him to be in New York and his hotel to shake and be like down the street kind of.
Yeah.
Insane.
So
insane.
Wild.
And then the most perfect raison d'etre for any artist. Right now, what do we need? We need music. They were going to cancel the tour and they decided not to. And almost no one didn't come to the concerts. And I think that is a testament to why music really does help us heal.
Totally agree. Another cool thing that happened is he talked about being friends with Lizzo. Lizzo joined the band at the Hollywood Bowl when they performed Morning View last year. And it's kind of an unlikely collaboration. But as we know, Lizzo is incredible with the flute. And Brandon Boyd tells me that his wife was like, you absolutely must collaborate with Lizzo. And they ended up going to a farmer's market together. So you can hear him talk about that. And also what the band has coming up next. So please check out the full article on consequence.net.
And please, if you want to, leave us a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast so you can stay up to date with these in-depth interviews. So now I'm going to turn it over to Paolo and Brandon Boyd of Incubus for this interview. Please enjoy.
So obviously there's this big Morning View tour that is coming up. Obviously, had there been no pandemic, this would have been the 20th anniversary tour in 2021.
Right.
And I'm curious, would you have still done this re-recording and this sort of 20th anniversary tour, even if there hadn't been a pandemic? Or like, what was the sort of process of, you know, you had just finished doing the Make Yourself tour, mm-hmm. You know, going straight into let's celebrate this next album. Let's keep it going.
I think that, you know, we were musing about it a lot after the success of the Make Yourself 20th anniversary tour. But nothing had been really set in stone. And so we knew we wanted to do something to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Morning View. But I think that we were in that stage of sort of ideating when the whole world shut down. So
yeah.
It definitely put a damper on a lot of people's plans, I suppose. it's probably putting it lightly. So, you know, we decided to do this this live broadcast with Veeps from the Morning View house where we wrote and recorded the record, which was a lot of fun. And I think that it was well received. And then, you know, we started musing about putting out that recording, that live recording, as a kind of like Morning View Live and to celebrate the 20th anniversary of it. And we got pretty close to kind of jumping in to the deep end with that idea. And then I just kept having these sort of like haunting sensations that maybe we needed to dive in a little bit deeper still. And, I actually kind of lobbied the band to do a proper re-record, like actually do a studio recording of this. We started hearing live mixes from that room and they were like cool. You know, it sounded like us playing live, which is we've been practicing for a long time. So yeah. It sounded good, but to me, it wasn't good enough. It just needed to be something a little more special than us just playing the songs from front to back. And so over the course of a couple of years, we ended up re-recording the whole thing and then re-recording it with our new bass player, Nicole Rowe, and really just giving it a really, really careful look. And I'm so glad that we did, because I actually am really stoked with the way that it turned out, and everybody in the band seems really happy with it too. So
amazing. I was very interested in this sentence when I was reading the press release, that you guys wanted to honor this burgeoning legacy, but also reimagine it as musicians who have been lovingly performing these songs night after night for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in the idea that if something gets recorded for, 23 years prior, it does not have to live and breathe in the same way every time musically.
Yeah.
Does it feel like these songs have had all of these elements over the years that you've maybe just had the impetus to change as you've, played these songs over and over again? Was there maybe an improvisational focus that you perhaps honed when doing these re-recordings?
We started to approach the re-recordings it was a balancing act. It was balancing, once again, the sort of burgeoning legacy of this thing that we made 23 years ago, which a lot of people have listened to and a lot of people love, and they like it the way that it is. It's like, it's not broken, but we've been playing so many of these songs, hundreds of times, a year since we put them out. And then so in subtle ways, they've sort of morphed and changed. In certain ways, they've evolved. Sometimes they've evolved out into totally different arrangements and then made their way back to the original arrangement. We've been playing them that long at this point. So what you're hearing on, what you're hearing on Morning View 23 is 23 years of us kind of like honing and refining and throwing out the original idea and then bringing it back home. Some of the songs are recorded true to form in their same arrangement as they were on the original record. And then some of them are like live versions that we have done. And so some of that stuff is present on like the song Circles, which we just put out, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now. The ending is a little bit different. The beginning is a little bit different. It's mostly the same. Like you can tell it's the same song, but there's like embellishments. There are things that are stretched out here and there. And the next song that we're putting out, I think, is Under My Umbrella, if I'm not mistaken. And
interesting.
Listeners will notice that it has just subtle differences. But it's been really interesting and really fun, shocking at times to see the reaction. I can't wait for this. I fucking hate you guys for doing this. How could you, why would you re-record? You know what I mean? It's like, it's been all over the place. But for the most part, I think people have been kind of stoked to see what a band would do with the same material 23 years
ago. Yeah. And I love that it does speak to the idea, kind of like I was saying earlier, that, music does not have to be the same way every single time. And that, these creations that you made so long ago can still reinvent themselves. Have you found that you've just really had that sort of attitude about a lot of the music that Incubus and your solo music has had, over the last 25 years? Are you a little bit more of a like, oh, I would love to edit this or just try something different because we've just done it the same so many times?
It's not even so much because you've done it the same so many times. It's even when songs are done, when you record them and master them and put them out into the world, they're never done. These things are in very kind of odd and sort of hard to describe ways, they're living beings. There are these weird aesthetic entities that make their way into the world, and they take on a completely different life depending on whose ears they're moving through and whose experience they're moving through. So there's that part of it. But then there's God forbid, the artists themselves, and we're performing them on a night-to-night basis. And once again, not so much that we get sick of playing them a particular way, it's that these songs, sometimes you're playing it and it sounds great and you're like, dude, this is 20 years later, what if you it, like, what if you played the drums like this? Or what if you like tweaked the guitar like that? Or ooh, what if you moved the bass from the bass guitar to like a sub keyboard? Or what if I pitched the vocal down? Or what if I, you know, it's like, it's we're constantly refining it. It's almost on a night to night basis. So it's part of the fun of live performance is that you're balancing, number one, a very palpable chaos, because we're performing live music and we're not playing the tracks. It's like, it's going to be a little different. There are variables every night that are a little bit different. And there are countless variables as well. You're where you are, where you've been, how you feel, what you've eaten, you know, all these things. Yeah, are,
absolutely.
They can take them into consideration. And then there's also this lurking, almost like sort of like a phantom presence in the, not even on the background, it's in the foreground. You have this understanding that people want to hear their song the way they want to hear it. And that can be a hindrance in certain ways. But I choose to look at it, and I think as a band, we choose to look at it mostly as a blessing. It's like people are coming to hear the songs that they want to hear, and they want to hear them in a particular way. So taking that into consideration with our own desire to continue to refine and tweak all those variables we're, you know, bringing into consideration as well. It's like this delicious sort of stew, you know, that we're constantly churning in, and sometimes it tastes perfect. And sometimes it's like, oh, could you use a little more salt? You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that you did kind of point out, you know, that there's like sort of two different fans of like, you know, a lot of fans do want to hear those songs the way that they heard on the record. I think I used to be that way, where it was like, I get a little mad when a band would really totally switch it up on me and try something different. But then I think I've seen so many shows now that I've realized, like, no, this is where the band is at tonight. Like, this is where they're going to be. And I think that there's so much value in that beyond what your own expectations as the concert goer is. Obviously, there were a lot of songs that have on this album that have been in Incubus set lists over the years, just hands down, a lot of the big ones. But there were, of course, some songs that were not on every Incubus set list for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you were revisiting those songs and re-recording them, did anything surprise you or stick out to you that you just kind of remembered and were like, wow, like, I cannot believe we did that. I can't believe we never tried this live. Anything kind of in that vein?
Sure. It's interesting to me that you asked this question, because one of the major takeaways for me from re-recording and then mixing this new version of Morning View has been that some of the, like, the deep album cuts, the ones that weren't singles, are the ones that stick out to me the most as far as like how awesome they sound in the re-record. And I think it's because they were sort of left alone for so long. You know, we wouldn't have put them on the album 23 years ago if we didn't love something about them. But then somehow or other, for any number of reasons, they sort of fell by the wayside and didn't get sort of performed as often. Songs like Blood on the Ground, songs like Under My Umbrella, even like the last track, Aqueous Transmission, which we did play for a long time and then we haven't played now for quite a long time. We re-recorded these, and once we started to really dig into them, and especially during the mixing process, it was like, this shit is good. Like, this is like, we're all like, and they're like, yes, sounds good, you know? So I can only hope that people listening to it, when they get the chance to listen to it, will have a similar response. Because, you know, at first, we're only bouncing these things off of each other. And this is with new music too, which we're currently doing. We're writing a new record, take a brief pause to go on tour, and then we'll get back to it in May.
Nice.
But you know, it's five people in a room together, and we don't have any kind of like oversight. We've never been the band that works with the kind of producers that are like lording over us and telling us that there needs to be a chorus right here, or this arrangement is wrong. It's like everything you've ever heard from this band comes from five people sitting in a room together. And then when we work with the producer, it's after the music has been like written, you know? So for better or worse, what you see is what you get.
Absolutely. I want to kind of talk about, obviously, some of the lyrics on this album. They were written at a very particular kind of turning point in your life. You've spoken already at length about what a lot of these songs were inspired by. But sure. I want to know, you know, were there any lyrics that kind of brought you, when revisiting, just brought you really straight back to those kind of heavy feelings from 23 years ago? That's a pretty big question. So feel free to answer whatever way you feel.
Yeah, quite a lot of them. You know, what I have spoken about previously and other storytelling moments was that it was such a weird, wonderful, heartbreaking, but also kind of revelatory period of time in my life. As I'm sure anyone who's 25, 26 years old, you know, our 20s are such fascinating periods of time. It's like, it's all happening. It's all happening at such a ridiculous pace, and you're an adult, but you're kind of not really an adult, especially if you're American, you know, you're kind of like children until we're in our 30s, I think. You know, and I was experiencing what was, unfortunately for me, a third sort of pretty severe heartbreak. I had, by the time I was 25, 26, and when we were making this record, I went through this breakup that was intense to, you know, it's all relative to someone's experience, but it was my third round of this. And I was learning a lot about myself in that kind of quiet grieving. And I use music as a way of kind of like making sense of my experience, thinking out loud, so to speak. And there was that. I was going through the kind of, you know, your classic mid-20s breakup moment. But then we were also experiencing our first real taste of, I guess you could call mainstream success, for lack of a better term. And so it was such a strangely dichotomous moment in my life where I was sad and kind of at times probably a little bit morose, but then we were like winning at the same time in this other way. And we were in this beautiful house, this giant empty man.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
With just like recording gear in it and mattresses. We looked like we were squatting in this house, right?
Yeah.
And I was there with my best friends in the world, and we were making music and doing what we had always, you know, hoped we would be able to do. And so it was just this incredible, like, happy, sad experience. And so I think back on it quite fondly because I learned so much during that period of time. And then the success of Morning View was a wonderful thing as well. So it is fascinating to look back on it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And your lyrics have honestly gotten, I'm not better, but like, you know, they just have covered so much ground even since Morning View. And I knew, you know, as I was kind of going back and re-listening and kind of really rereading some of these lyrics, like it does feel, you know, the comparison between this and In Light Grenades is just so interesting too. And the transition between those, you know, the three albums that kind of happened in there, I just think is fascinating. Anyways, I've got another question that I think is very fascinating in terms of you guys wanting to celebrate this album, the 20th anniversary of this album, kind of, you know, coinciding with a global pandemic. And meanwhile, back in 2001, this album dropped a month after 9/11. I just am wondering, you know, what was it like having something that you were so proud of come out in a time of such remarkable and uncertainty and like nationwide anguish?
I'm not going to lie to you. There was a period of time when I was still, maybe just it's youth, but when we're younger, we're a little more prone to like magical thinking, I think. But there was a period of time where I was like, is it us that's causing these horrible things to happen in the world? Every time we put a record out, it feels like some terrible event happens that we're really like, wait, it definitely puts things into perspective, you know, that I don't know what the whole saying is, but the term like best laid plans kind of comes to mind. Music is sort of this, like, for us, it's been this, it's a constant. It's sort of a continuum and one that we joyously approach and keep getting kind of like joyously pulled back into. The world is gonna world. Is that a saying?
You know what? It is now. So
there's always going to be something. There's always going to be something that's happening, and we need art to help us make sense of it. From not only a person that loves music and loves art and loves literature and film, all kind of falling under that banner of art. These mediums help us make sense of the world through telling stories, and whether it's audio or through picture or I find these things to be really important. And that's not even taking into consideration that like I am a musician and a painter and someone that likes to, you know, create worlds in these mediums. So on that side of it, it helps me make sense of the world from within it as well. And so I feel like art is important. To me, that's one of the reasons why it's important. There's always going to be some political uprising or a financial collapse or a pandemic or a terrorist attack. And that's not to be, crass about these things or underscore their importance. But art, to me, is what helps us make sense of all of the constant chaos. So I feel like we really need it, you know?
Absolutely. I'm curious too, just because, you know, really interested in what you're saying here. Like, you know, when 9/11 happened, you're about to put out this album. It's a huge moment of kind of chaos. You know, how did you feel? And you and the band, did you guys kind of talk about this really remarkable moment that just happened in American history and how uncertain everything was?
Yeah. I mean, we were in New York for the...
Really?
We were in New York for the MTV Video Music Awards.
Oh my God.
We've been... Wow. Nominated for our song Drive. First and only nomination, our brief sort of brush with MTV back in the day. And then I think that was like September 9th, maybe.
Wow.
And then so we were there and we were starting the Morning View tour in New Hampshire. I believe it was on the 14th or some within a couple of days of that. And then we had two sold out shows in New York City. I believe they were the 15th and the 16th. I could be off by a day. But our collective knee-jerk reaction after, being mere blocks from ground zero there. I mean, my hotel literally shook and windows were breaking around me and car alarms are going off. It was absolutely insane.
Wow.
Talk about chaos. Our knee-jerk reaction was to cancel the tour. And we sat with that for a few minutes and every bone in our collective being knew that that wasn't the right thing to do. We just felt like it was, it would be better to make music and have three people come and have those people be with us in a moment where we're able to potentially transcend these moments of chaos. And so we offered everyone their money back that didn't want to come, and almost nobody didn't show up, which is amazing. Yeah. And so we were correct in our assumption that everyone else needed the music as much as we did. You know, this was it was a weird moment because we could have very easily been wrong. You know, we didn't want to be insensitive to that moment, but it just felt even more wrong to kind of like surrender to that kind of chaos. It was like, nah, you know what? Fuck you. Like we're going to fucking play music, and whoever is doing this to us can go fuck themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the 25, 26 year old.
Yeah. Just like, well, you know, the people really needed you. I think people needed something. And, you know, I felt that way in the pandemic, and it was such a shame that, like, you know, you couldn't go out and see music to just kind of take away from some of the harsher sort of realities of the situation. And so, you know, sure. I think it's a really beautiful thing that you guys were allowed to keep going, and that people showed up and really had that catharsis with you guys after such uncertainty.
The pandemic made it very different. Like we were literally not allowed to go. Like we were all locked in our houses.
Yeah. that release had to happen here. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like we were, you know, and we could have it the way we're doing it right now and talking over video calls. And, you know, the live stream was really cool. I do want to ask about that in a second. But yeah, I do think it's interesting that like the world's going to world and you don't really know how you're going to adjust to that afterwards. But, you know, people will always need to let, you know, let it go somehow. So I want to ask, about that, that 20th anniversary live stream in 2021 and revisiting that house. One of the things that obviously, you know, is such a huge part of this album, and I really noticed when I was re-listening, is that there's just so much dynamic and space. And it really felt like you guys wanted to let the ocean air kind of pollute every song. Like I just really feel, you know, not every album is recorded where the listener can really feel like, oh, this was recorded in Malibu. And obviously the album cover really helps. But like, I feel like it is in the sonics of the album that there is this kind of beachy, you can feel the rolling of the waves. It's a lot in the synths and in the guitar lines. So yeah, what was it like kind of revisiting that kind of like ocean vibe, I guess, for lack of a better term?
For the most part, it was pretty awesome to be back in that room. The thing that stuck out to me, it's still when I listen to the original recording of Morning View, the thing that sticks out to me is the way that the snare sounds. And I know this is probably not something that most people will pick up on, though I could be very wrong, but the living room where we wrote and recorded the record was super bad, like cathedral windows and big, big, tall ceilings. It was like two stories. And the second story had a loft where we set up all the recording gear. And then we draped down like thousands of wires. It was like a waterfall of cables that would come off and plug everything in. But the way every time Jose would hit his snare, it would kind of bounce off of this really tall ceiling. This room was designed for acoustic orchestral performances. So we were told, not for a rock band. So it took a little bit of wrangling, you know, some baffles and some rugs and things like that to kind of absorb some of the sound. But one thing that we could never change was the way that the snare would bounce off the room. And then so we just leaned into it. And when we went back, and it created a thing, like every song, every time Jose hits that snare, there's just like this, like this sounds like it was recording a big orchestral room. And so we kind of fell in love with it. We go back into that room in 2021 and to do this live stream. And I remember Jose was like, his kit was set up and he's sitting down, they're miking it up and he starts just kind of like slapping on it. And it was like, there it is.
It's same thing. Hadn't changed.
Same sound. There it is. It's incredible. I love it. So little things like that are what stuck out to me the most.
I love that. I love that you brought up the snare sound. I'm a drummer myself. And I also think that that's so interesting how huge the snare sounds, but it's tuned so high. Like I feel like he's always done the highest. And I think it was also the sound of, you know,
at the time,
late 90s, early 2000s, like, you know, even Chad Smith he's been doing the super high tuned snare forever. And I feel like it really does, really shines on that album in particular. Right. So moving away a little bit, it was great that you guys got to do that Morning View performance last year at the Hollywood Bowl. I wish I could have been there. I love the Hollywood Bowl. Did it feel like particularly appropriate kind of doing that album there? And I also want to know how this Lizzo flute collaboration, happened.
It was, there was no other place to do that show, to try out that concept of playing, you know, that record from front to back. To me, it was the Bowl or nowhere else. So it was a little bit of a no-brainer.
Nice.
really, really, I'm not surprised it was enjoyable for us as a band, but I'm surprised by how much we enjoyed it. Normally, yeah. Hometown shows can be a little stressful because mm-hmm. you know that everyone in your family, every ex you've ever had, they're there in the audience and you're sort of like, you want to do better than you even normally. Normally, I want to do my best every night, but like I wanted to do my best. And mm-hmm. that can bring some kind of like anxiousness to the thing, which mm-hmm. the minute we walked on stage, it just sort of went away. It was like we felt embraced, which is such a lovely thing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it was really fun. The Lizzo coming out with us. Lizzo and I have been texting off and on. I don't know where it began. It may have been a connection that my wife put together. I think she, at one point a few years back, read something to me that she read somewhere because she's a huge Lizzo fan. She was freaking out. She's like, Lizzo says she wants to go to the farmer's market with you. In some, I don't know where she said it. I don't know if your listeners might be able to, or your readers might be able to connect the dots better than I. But I was like, well, that's delightfully random. and then somehow we connected on Instagram. And the first time I met her, I think I may have sang her happy birthday on FaceTime or something like that. And then we just started chatting. And then Mike and her started chatting, and he's the one that connected us for her to come on stage together. So you might ask Mikey about that.
Nice.
But she's a wild talent. I'm blown away by, she could just be a classical flute player and I'd be like, wow, dude, yeah. crushing it. But then she has this beautiful voice and she's such a, an evocative, but apparently provocative writer as well. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of down for her. Yeah.
Amazing. That's great to hear. I totally understand would go to the farmer's market with Lizzo too. So
yeah, we still haven't done that, but maybe one day.
One day. Yeah. So kind of shifting gears a little bit, you know, I was really interested in the last interview that you did with Consequence. You did it with my colleague, Spencer Kaufman, and that was for your solo album a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And you kind of talked about, you referenced feeling a little bit like an outsider to the kind of quote unquote scene that you guys came up in the late 90s and the early 2000s. And last year you played that Sick New World Festival, that big, mm-hmm. you know, new metal industrial fest in Vegas. And I'm just kind of curious, you know, what the whole nostalgia of that event in particular meant to you. And, you know, feel free mm-hmm. to speak as candidly as you'd like. But I'm just kind of curious about that particular kind of nostalgia for that era right now and you mm-hmm. know, where you guys really fit into it right now.
Mm-hmm. The last part of your question, I don't know how to answer. I have no yeah. idea where we fit yeah. into that realm of music. And I've been privy to some of this sort of nostalgia through people sending me things on Instagram. And mm-hmm. we fall into the space sort of between alternative music or grunge and then that kind of new metal moment and whatever. And just rock music.
Yeah.
I suppose my at times evident disdain for being a part of any scene is that I never wanted to be part of any scene. Mm-hmm. I love making music. And I think as evidenced by the kind of cornucopia of types of music that I've made and the ways that Incubus, like we have a spectrum of music, you could call mm-hmm. it. And so the older I get, I'm less concerned about being attached to any particular scene because my love of just making music and performing music is so front and center that it's like, doesn't really matter to me who listens.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful that people listen. You know, it's an incredible, incredible blessing that people want to listen to the things that we do or the things that I do. And so when we did that Sick New World thing, it was more based on our current and historical relationships with System of a Down and the Deftones.
Oh, great.
Among other bands, Korn, and some of these bands were, you know, pigeonholed into a bunch of these labels as well. But those bands were, we properly came up with them. Like Korn was so good to Incubus. Still to this day, but like, especially back in the day when we were nowhere, they were bringing us on tour with them in Europe, across the US. And so we're indebted to them for sure. And we love those dudes. And then System of a Down, like we used to do, we did like club tours with them where we both were in terrible little vans with the trailer or driving ourselves. And good morning, you know, like tired and wrecked from driving all night to get to the 50th show you've played that week. So we love those dudes. I love Serge. And then the Deftones we've toured with a lot over the years. And those guys are trailblazers as far as I'm concerned and are more relevant today than they were even back then.
So, I know. Yeah. We're in the Deftones Renaissance right now. I feel like they're really getting their due, you know, and they got their due 20 years ago too. So it's
agreed. I think all of those bands are deserving of the praise that they have gotten historically and today, because all of them to some degree were trailblazers. It was more about that. Like these are people that we know and love. And when it was presented to us, it was like kind of with them. And then as the bill started to take shape, it was like, oh, wow, this is really on the game. This is a full nostalgic kind of throwback moment. And so be it. That's great. People seem to love it. It sold out real fast and everyone seemed super stoked. We had a great time. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Well, very well put. I have two questions left for you, Brandon.
Yep.
Obviously, we've been talking about Morning View so much, and I brought up my favorite Incubus album earlier, Light Grenades. Mm. I feel like that, you know, there's, like I said, you could really track sort of the three album, you know, from Morning View into Crow and then into Light Grenades. I feel like there's such a great progression there. Mm. But it really felt like, at least, you know, I was very young, obviously, when these albums came out. I was, I think, 9 or 10 years old when Light Grenades came out. But upon kind of looking back and really re-listening to these albums, Light Grenades really felt like this huge turning point for you guys. And I would love to hear about that album and about, you know, with the legacy of a lot of these albums, you know, Make Yourself, especially in Morning View, that we've been talking about, you know, where does Light Grenades and even Crow, if you want to talk about that album too, do those kind of live in the Incubus legacy?
I think that you're onto something with, there was like a decided trajectory between Morning View into Curls of the Murder into Light Grenades. So, and a lot of it has to do with not only a creative maturation, I think happens if a band or a group of artists is given or they earn, or maybe both given and they earn enough space to kind of like really become who they are and who they were sort of meant to become as artists. That was taking place. But then you add in the sort of like curious ingredient of success.
Yeah.
It's a very, very strange ingredient. And it's one that I don't think anyone could anticipate the effects of. The effects of success are, once again, delightfully chaotic. So rife with potential for the whole thing to crash and burn. Mm-hmm. So rife with that potential that crashing and burning is actually the norm. So we definitely had our moments most decidedly between the success of Morning View all the way up until like, If Not Now When, which came out in 2011. By the time we got to the recording process and tour of If Not Now When, our whole world were falling apart. Our band almost ceased to exist by about that point. So this is like, it was like, we're winning. Oh yeah, winning again. And it was this thing where we were just kind of holding on by the skin of our teeth. And I think another thing that is worth mentioning was that we're just a bunch of young guys. You know what I mean? Yeah. Big dreams and high hopes. And we're young men, you know? And we still had a lot of wiggles. So we are not old now, but we're not young anymore. And we've definitely gotten our wiggles out, so to speak. And we're in a very, very different place as a band, which is kind of great. The same passion for music, but to not have the desire to do stupid shit.
Yeah.
That's the place we should leave it.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.